If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
WGN. Hello there. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate you sharing part of your afternoon with us. A little bit short show today at 12:40. We're going to turn things over to Andy Mazur for your White Sox pregame. He's got lots of stuff to talk with you about, but we've got some stuff to talk with you about right now, too. I don't know if you heard about this, Griffin, but there was a flight in observance of World Environment Day, that was this week. United Airlines scheduled a flight from Chicago to Los Angeles, trying to be as green as possible. It was really interesting. And there is an actual job at United Airlines. He's like the, chief spokesperson for sustainability, some kind of job title like that. But he said in a statement that we're not going to get it perfect, but we do want to see how far we could get. So they use things like compostable utensils and cups and recycled materials, things like that. They use a mix of biofuel. That's a long haul. That's a long flight.
It's a biofuel blend.
Yes.
Yeah, biofuel is extraordinarily important to us as we seek to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah, that's the senior manager for environmental strategy and sustainability at United.
There's another job title, too, that I ran across that was in a Wall Street Journal article that was like, wow, that's a great job. Because I saw both of these. I was like, they have a lot of people with environmental sustainability in their titles. But I think that's an interesting thing. Other airlines have followed suit and tried to do other things. So it's not, they're not doing this kind of alone. So American and Alaska Airlines and Delta and United have already, earlier this year, replaced their the single-use plastic straws and stirrers with coffee. You know, they replaced those with bamboo.
It's so funny. When I saw this headline, I thought it was just all about the fuel because that is such a pressing concern for airlines and for a number of reasons. And I think that is ultimately like the main thing. But they went inside the plane too, and tried to overhaul every aspect. And
I think
that's pretty cool.
I think it's pretty interesting. And it was, this was a one-off experiment. This one flight from Chicago to L.A. Just one off to kind of, you have to start somewhere and you have to just kind of see. I think it was like, let's see what we learn. Let's see what we can do.
Right.
And see what we do today could build into a more sustainable practice. So I think that's pretty interesting. And also this week also Delta said the plastic stuff on the amenity, like when you get headphones, they're wrapped in plastic and things like that. They're going to stop doing that.
Oh, interesting.
They announced that this week. JetBlue said that it was going to offset the carbon output of its customers for the month of June.
Right. They did that for this flight, too. I'm reading now from Fast Company that, they bought carbon offsets to cover the cost of or the rest of the emissions.
I think it's a really interesting idea because it is, so much. There's a lot of travel out of necessity in the business world now. A lot more people are flying. It used to be such a big deal. Like not many. It wasn't weird to come across someone who had never been on a plane.
Right.
And now that's really unusual. So, a lot of people travel, as we all see, the minute they open the gate for boarding. Everyone acts like a bunch of savages trying to get on the plane. Everybody, like, there's so many people trying to get, like, guys, it's not taking off without us. We can all just relax. But there is so much to the extent that there
if
is
it's not assigned seating, then
I know.
Southwest, anything
goes. Even in the Southwest line, people, if you're like in boarding group 14 or, you have to stand by your little post where 14 and people go, are you 13 or 14? Cause I'm like, guys, we can walk on together. It's fine. It's probably, there's 100 people behind us. It's probably not going to fight over a seat.
Oh, so naive, Amy. Everything's a competition in this world.
In this country, anyway.
You must get in.
Our obsession with winning and crushing it and killing
rules.
It, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's a really interesting idea, and it's cool that the airlines have tried to do this. There's even there's a Fast Company story that notes that in Sweden, there's a bit of a cultural shift there to flight shame people that travel a lot. So there's a word. Do you want to try to pronounce it?
Yeah, I actually like that. Flygskam.
Yeah, there it is. And it means flight shame. So meaning, hey, I use a lot of carbon emissions because I travel all the time. I fly. So it's trying to find ways to fly less. or right. people that are even pledging to fly.
That's so funny. Not that's, at all. That's really not become a part of the culture here.
Not at all.
I don't think anyone gets shamed for flying for work or for whatever reason.
I think it's still a bragging point. Oh, I'm going to be out of town. I'm flying. Oh, right. I got a flight in the morning. I think we still talk about it, meaning I'm important and going to my own business.
hey, people who fly are more important. That's just a fact. No, is it because it's in Europe where everything's closer and maybe... I'm trying to think of why that kind of sentiment would flourish somewhere else and not here. Like, it does seem more necessary, especially if you're going to another country.
That's true.
Really, how are you going to get there? You could drive to a couple countries, but you have to fly. And there, maybe it feels a little less necessary, but I'm sort of pulling that out of nowhere.
I mean, look, I grew up in Texas, so to me, it's reasonable to fly everywhere.
Right.
I mean,
even in our own country, it's like you need to
even
fly.
Even in our own state. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Where I grew up, like, it was perfectly reasonable right. if you needed to go to Houston or Dallas or whatever on business. It was perfectly reasonable to fly there.
I'm just thinking we've been known to shame people in this country for all kinds of things. Why not this? Why does Sweden
Let's
have
start
this?
It. If you fly
I'm not dying
lot,
to do it,
call
but
us
I'm just
up
curious.
And let us shame you. No, I don't want to do it. Because, well, that's the thing.
How dare you?
It is very convenient. And in the truth of the matter is, if you want to go to the beach or something like that, if you want to, you have to fly.
Right. And this is such an interesting position that airlines find themselves in, because usually we talk about, not all the time, and I think it's actually maybe a problem about the way we talk about business and environmental concerns, but a lot of times it's as if they're at odds with each other. In order to be greener or more, you know, conscious of these kinds of things, that is often presented as something that would likely be a detriment to the bottom line for a lot of companies.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
with airlines, it's the opposite. The lower fuel costs are, or the less fuel they use, that's one of the biggest costs for these companies. They want to use less. And actually, the Dreamliner 787 that Boeing produced I don't know if you were following that story a couple months ago, but there were a lot of whistleblower and lawsuits about the fact that the Dreamliner at Boeing was being produced so quickly that things were getting missed.
Yeah.
And this was in the wake of those two accidents.
And the crises have continued for Boeing.
Right.
You know, even after the 737 MAX has continued to be grounded, now there's an issue in all the 737 or I shouldn't say in all, but that has extended to other aircraft in the 737 family.
Right.
There's a wing slat that tracks. It wouldn't crash the plane per se, but it would make the landing smoother if it works properly.
Right.
It's about stabilizing it. That needed to be replaced on about 100 plus aircraft.
Yeah.
And they were given 10 days to do it. So it's like the hits keep coming for Boeing.
Well, and the reason that my understanding is sort of limited, but it seemed like the reason that a lot of things were slipping through the cracks like that was that they were so insistent on getting that plane out quickly.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was that they had experienced competition with other planes that were more fuel efficient.
Yeah.
And the Dreamliner, one of the main points about the Dreamliner was that it would be more fuel efficient and it would be competitive in that way. So this is something that these airlines really do want to cut back on, especially fuel.
I was surprised to learn what the what airlines were responsible for in terms of carbon emissions. It's about 2%. I would have thought it was much higher, given how much air traffic
right.
is in the air at any given time. But United, as they made this announcement for this green flight this week, they said the average flight on United generates about 65 pounds of garbage. That's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Gosh, you know, and I was saying, like, what happens in the inside of the plane is so minor compared to the actual fuel emission. And I still sort of believe that, but that's more than I would have guessed.
Absolutely.
That's
I would have said the carbon emission was much higher. I would have put that number higher and thought it was, but I guess it's probably coming from industry and.
65 pounds. Yeah, you got a full plane. That's a lot of people, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, 65 pounds of garbage is a pretty big number. So, you know, I think this is really interesting. I hope other airlines follow suit. You know, We gotta not wreck the planet the way we keep wrecking it. We're on track for not good things. So, yeah. So I think this is really, really interesting. But Fast Company covered this. Wall Street Journal did. I talked about it a little bit on the Crane's Daily Gist podcast. So there's lots of interesting details about that story. So if you want to read it, hit one of those places or follow me on Twitter.
And that was on the 5th that flight took place. Yeah, it looks like
yes,
it from Chicago to LA.
Yeah, it was the 5th. So if you follow me on Twitter, I'll be sure and tweet the Fast Company story out after the program so you can read about it for yourself. All right, we're going to take a little break back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Gentle reminder that at 1240, I'm going to turn you over to Andy Mazur for that Blackhawks. That's the wrong thing. The White Sox. I'm so used to saying the Blackhawks because that's who's usually preempting showtime. It's all good, but it's the White Sox today. So Andy Mazur is going to do that White Sox pregame, get the game going, all that good stuff. And then I'll be back here from 7 to 9 talking about environmental issues. I'm going to be talking about some conservation efforts that people are doing right here in Chicago that are super cool. I'm super excited to have folks in here. I'm going to have a guest co-host tonight that is works in habitat restoration at the Field Museum. So that's going to be so fun.
Super very cool.
But speaking of that topic,
yeah, this is actually kind of related.
This is totally related. This was a story that you found, Griffin, that is so interesting, and that is I saw this kind of running around the internet this week a little bit, and I thought, what? But there is a new crop of brands of clothing that are billing themselves as washless or low wash clothing. And it's about convenience of not having to launder your clothing as often. You know, that's useful if you're traveling or busy or whatever, just maybe don't like doing laundry. But they're also making an environmental point that's saying, hey, look, we're overwashing our clothes. It's not good for the planet. Washing machines count for about almost 20% of home water usage. And that's a lot. We can bring that way down. Even a washing machine company, AEG, estimates 90% of clothes that are washed aren't actually dirty enough to be thrown in the laundry basket. Okay. Here's where my questions began, Griffin. I think this is cool. And indeed, many, many feats of engineering have occurred to make clothing, you know, moisture wicking. That's our athletic wear, to make things antimicrobial so they won't smell. Like, you know, we've started seeing athletic clothing that's like, you're not going to have super bad BO at the gym or in your yoga class or whatever. You're not going to smell so bad.
That is a technology that's been under some development.
For a while.
Okay.
So that's a thing.
Yep.
So this is the next step of that. It's like, hey, what if these garments don't need to be washed as often? And when I say as often, I don't mean like wear that shirt two or three times. I'm talking about, so let's see, there is a type of t-shirt, a seaweed fiber t-shirt. I would like to point out that it is $85. The t-shirt that I'm wearing right now is $8 from Target. I realize there's an environmental impact discussion to be had there, but this is an $85 seaweed fiber t-shirt. It's treated with peppermint oil, so it's supposed to keep it fresher longer between washes. And the brand says that this action will save about 3,000 liters of water over the course of a lifetime compared to a regular cotton t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. I find myself, a little in the dark on this one. It sounds great.
It sounds great. There's
the impact sounds good.
I'm on board with the impact. I think it's
hard
cool.
to believe if you don't like see it, feel it in your hands, wear it.
I know.
And prove itself.
I need to test run this, please.
Yeah, yeah.
I do not have $85 to buy a seaweed shirt, but I'm very curious. Let's convince WGN to buy us some seaweed shirts, Griffin. I'm sure they'll go for this because I'd like to test drive this because I'm fascinated. Because here's the thing, you know, once you wear a t-shirt, it's like stretched out, and you gotta, you know, reshape it by washing it. So that's the part that there's the BO and cleanliness and hygiene factor, but if it's going to be engineered to be antimicrobial, it's not going to smell bad. Mm-hmm. You're not going to seem like you're wearing a shirt you haven't washed in weeks. Okay. I'm willing to accept that technology exists, but I wonder about, is it going to look all stretched out and ridiculous after a couple of wears?
Oh yeah.
That's my thing.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes washing just as much sort of brings a piece of clothing back to its like original, you know, shape and fit.
You know, with jeans, you know, you throw when you get them right out of the washer, they're nice and snug in all the right places and they're all good. Now, there is another company. It's a startup called Unbound Merino.
Right.
And they have a $65 t-shirt. They create wool travel clothes that can go weeks without being washed. Weeks is a long time. But this was the one that I was like, all right. A menswear company called Wool and Prince. They make Oxford shirts, about $128 there. $42 boxer briefs out of wool, all designed to be washed infrequently. Now, underwear is a whole other thing in this conversation, I feel like.
Yikes.
It's one thing to wear a t-shirt that perhaps could retain its shape, perhaps could not be smelly after you wear it and run around for a couple days in it. Okay, I'm willing to accept that. But underwear, come on, guys, come on. How do you feel about this, Griffin? Like, would you
Yeah. It's tricky.
I think it's tricky. I don't know that.
I feel like I have a bad history already with wearing clothes repeatedly way too much.
This is a thing.
And so I need to get away from this, even though they seem to have developed technology that might help me.
Look, if there is underwear that you can wear without washing, I'm willing to believe that is a thing that exists. I don't know if I can get around the psychological part of... Hey, guys, I've worn this underwear for 3 weeks in a row. That sounds a bit weird to me. But hey, if you've done this, if you have this, any of this clothing, I would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. But right now, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all the good stuff. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here in just a couple minutes, we're going to turn you over to Andy Mazur for that White Sox pregame. But there's another story I want to bring to your attention. Again, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to tweet this out after the program. It's really interesting. It is a New York Times story that is about the shift in our behavior and our thinking in what we value and what we buy. We've talked about this a lot in terms of home ownership. More people are renting, part out of financial necessity, but it's becoming a shift. It's becoming a cultural shift in which it's not just about the financial necessity, but also about shifting attitudes around home ownership. It used to be that was the way to set yourself up. You buy your starter home and you keep trading up, and set yourself up and build equity in that home. But attitudes are shifting on that. So, of course, that's going to bleed out into other things. And so it takes a look at everything. You can rent everything. I mean, I've looked at Rent the Runway before for, you know, if you have a special event, it's expensive to buy a dress. If you have to buy a, you know, black tie, something, it's sure I'll rent that for $50, better than go to spend a couple hundred to buy it when I can probably only wear it once or twice.
Right.
So I think that's great, but that's expanding. A lot of services like that are, you know, you can rent your regular wardrobe. And at first you're thinking, well, no, you have to have clothes. But do you? Because if you're just going to upgrade them over time to be more fashionable and stay on top of trends, maybe not.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah, the subhead here on this story from the New York Times is owning nothing is now a luxury, thanks to a number of subscription services. And there's a picture of a woman sitting in her living room, which looks very nice. And she's on her computer in an outfit. And she says... The caption to the photo is, her skirt, couch, coffee table, bed frame, lamp, dress, and water cooler are all on loan from various subscription startups. So, like, most of what you see in the picture,
Is rented.
Is being rented.
And it is the new luxury,
Sort of. It's really strange. And there's an anxiety that comes along with it, I think, which is these companies that offer these subscriptions are new. We don't know what the future looks like for them. And if you are... basing, you know, what you own, I don't own much either. And I don't rent so much physical stuff, but with media, music, and we just saw iTunes is sort of powering down. It's not going away entirely, but it is leaving people who have built huge libraries of music, say, or content like that, feeling like, what's the future for the stuff that I own?
That I do have,
I can subscribe to anything where I have access to everything, but I don't know what the future for those companies is. And what if they leave?
And then suddenly I'm like, I've got nothing. I got to go buy a couch because I've been renting mine. And
exactly. And I don't have
clothes. I don't have. Yeah.
That's a little freaky. So
it's interesting.
But I'm also totally drawn by the convenience of it and sometimes the savings that can apply. But I don't know. Everything's relative.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, when you read about something, you think of it in terms of your own life. And for me, I was like, okay, well, most of my furniture I got from like thrift stores and stuff like that. My couch is kind of old. I've been thinking, gosh, I'd like a new couch. What if I just rented one instead of saving for one? But that's, I don't know.
Interesting. Maybe we could talk about this next week.
Yeah, I think we should. Maybe we should talk to somebody from one of these companies. That's what we're going to do. But you know what? Right now, it is time for us to wrap things up and turn things over to Andy Mazur for the White Sox pregame. All the stories I mentioned today, if you follow me on Twitter, at Amy Guth, G-U-T-H, I'm going to be sure and tweet all of those out so you can read them for yourselves. And we will continue this conversation next week. Here's Andy Mazur.